chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals your body needs. The Berkey Light is so powerful it can purify raw, untreated water from remote lake streams and stagnant ponds. The Berkey Light is transparent and glows in the dark with its rechargeable LED lighting system, so it can be used as a night light or camp light.
Get the Berkey Light Purifier for only...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd, and hopefully we'll have him with us just a minute. I've got to get my producer to actually transfer him over here to us. Colonel Boyd, are you there? Colonel Boyd, are you there? Well, we seem to have lost Colonel Boyd. There we are. I'm going to ask my producer to get him back onto the line here. But Lieutenant Colonel Art Boyd has led a fascinating life. But he's written a book now, many, many years after he was on a secret mission in Korea during the Korean War. At that time, of course, he was simply a young military officer. And the book is called Operation Broken Reed. It's a story of a secret intelligence gathering operation that took place during the Korean War that really changed the course of history, and you've never heard about it. They were sworn to secrecy for 25 years, and for 25 years or more, he did not tell anybody about what he had experienced, what he did. And, of course, it is an amazing story because nobody knew who the other American officers or enlisted men on this special mission were. And to this very date, why the government has kept it secret. Colonel, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, it's a pleasure being with you.
Why don't you sort of just start telling your story? You got into the military. When did you get in the military? How did you happen to join up?
Well, I joined the Army in January of 1946, after World War II, and went on to go to OCS in Fort Benning, Georgia. Was commissioned as a lieutenant, and chose to go into the Signal Corps because I had interest in communications. And wasn't too long after that I was in Germany. In fact, in August of 1951, I happened to be in Germany and received orders to report to Colonel George Brown, an officer from the Pentagon, for an interview for a special mission. I had no idea what that was all about. Soon found out that it meant that 10 Americans, along with 66 nationalist Chinese, would be going across the North Korean Peninsula gathering intelligence information, and my job was to encipher, place it into top secret code, and transmit it out of North Korea. It would be then relayed through the military communications system to the president in Washington. So that's a very brief of the operation. The last day of the mission was really a bad situation.
Well, good. Let's talk a little bit about the mission before we get to the last day of the mission, because
okay. It
really, of course, is a fascinating story about a group of very brave soldiers who undertook a secret mission operating behind enemy lines, and of course, if they were caught, why, they would be assassinated or they would be killed. And, of course, there were a number of nationalist Chinese who were there with them. And, of course, they were going to try to obtain information, intelligence information. The American military, the intelligence agencies, had spies all across the Korean Peninsula. But it was a matter of how you were going to get that information and get it back to Washington, D.C. So we'll be back here in just a moment as we begin to develop the story of Operation Broken Reed. We carry the book. It's a fascinating story. You'll really want to read it. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd, who's retired from the military now, but he had joined the military right after the Second World War, 1946, and was commissioned as a lieutenant, went into the Signal Corps, so he knew how to handle intelligence material. And in 1951, when the Korean War was still underway, he was actually told to report to Washington, D.C. for assignment on a secret mission. Now, of course, how many people ever have an opportunity to go on a secret mission? And, of course, he was told to contact a Colonel Brown. Was that really his name, do you think?
No, I think that was an assumed name. And I didn't get to Washington. The meeting I held was in headquarters European Command in Germany.
All right, fine. So
he came to Germany.
But, of course, everybody in this operation really operated under an assumed name, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
And so to this date, you don't know who any of the people really were who were with you.
Well, we had a pilot. His assumed name was Bill Robbins, and then we had a co-pilot, Sam Puller, a navigator by the name of Jim Pearson. Two CIA fellows, Jerry Hensley and John Tyler. I was a radio operator that would do all the communications end of it. We had two frogmen, Tom Capeman and Reed Lynch. Excuse me. And we had two rangers, Dan Kingsley and Ted Moody. Those were the assumed names. I never knew their real names because of national security. They gave us assumed names. So in any event, we were captured. We wouldn't know anything about our team members. It was part of the business of national security.
But, of course, they told you that this was a top-secret mission and that you would never be able to talk about it, at least for 25 years, something like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's 46 years, actually.
46 years?
46 years, yes, sir. Until 1998. The mission ended in January of 1952. That's when the mission took place. And it wasn't until 1998 that I was able to say anything about the mission. So I had to keep it inside. I couldn't write anything about it. I certainly was ordered to keep my mouth shut. And I obeyed that order. The penalty, if I hadn't, would have been the possibility of spending my days in a national federal prison, probably Leavenworth.
All right, fine. But, of course, you were also told that if you did what you were supposed to, why, you'd be kept in the Army and you'd be promoted to the ranks. And they kept their promise, didn't they?
They did that.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Colonel Boyd talks about how he was told this was a top-secret mission he was going on. There were going to be 10 people there, and, of course, they didn't know who any of their names were. Everybody worked under an assumed name. There were people from the CIA, Rangers. There were all frogmen. There were all sorts of specialists in one form or another. And then there were a fair number of nationalist Chinese who were there with them. And you started, what was it, on the eastern coast of Korea or the western coast of Korea? Where were you landed? How were you landed?
We were landed near Kosong, K-O-S-O-N-G, which is just north of a demilitarized zone in North Korea. We were landed from Japan by submarine. That was on the 11th January of 1952.
And, of course, how long was this operation to last?
It was a week long. It was supposed to end up on the 17th of January. 17th or 18th of January, as the case may be. We'd move across the peninsula. We'd go from Kosong to Wonsan and then to Sibuyeonni. Down to Yunnan and Haijai and then Anjan, and then to the west coast where we'd be picked up by a helicopter.
All right, fine. So basically then, of course, you start out and you have places where you're going to meet the intelligence officers. How is this going to work?
Well, that was prearranged. They would be tuned in to the convoy, and the CIA agents, the two CIA agents, would notify them of our approximate location, and they would know when to have the reports ready. We travel only at night, Dr. Stan. We never travel during the daylight hours because our own Air Force may very well have clobbered us if we tried that.
Well, of course, the whole idea was that you were supposedly prisoners of these these Chinese troops. They couldn't tell them from Korean troops. And they claimed that you were their prisoners and they were taking you someplace for interrogation. Was that the cover story?
We were traveling from one coast to the other. We'd be picked up at a port, Hasadong, which is on the Korea Bay, by a Chinese gunboat, taken across the Yellow Sea to mainland China, and there would we be held as prisoners.
Because that was the cover story. That wasn't what it was really all about.
No.
Now, of course, so did you have any vehicles? Did you just have to walk?
There were 11 vehicles. There was a 3 recon vehicles. There were 2 modified American half tracks. They were modified to fit the need we had. We had 2 T-38 tanks. They were Soviet tanks. We had 4 wheel vehicles, and we traveled as 11 vehicle convoy, and it was a small armored convoy.
Now, of course, did you know what type of intelligence you were going to try to pick up? Did you have any idea what the information was that the American military wanted to get from these spies, these assets who are working behind the North Korean lines?
Well, there were 22 operatives that had been inserted into North Korea, different methods. They were put in by submarine. They were put through the lines. They were also put in by airborne. And they infiltrated within the high command of both the North Korean and the Communist Chinese armies, and they acted as officers for those armies, as staff officers, and they were able to. By the way, they went in June and July of 1951, and our mission was, of course, January of 52. So they'd been there for 6 months, and they had accumulated all the information. They put the information into a regular format, which was then turned over to the CIA agents. The agents then translated the information from either Chinese or Korean to English and gave the information to me. I encrypted the information and then transmitted it out.
Well, now, were you concerned that the North Korean communists might be actually trying to interpret or trying to intercept what you were putting out? After all that was going on the radio waves, they would have been able to monitor that, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes, they'd be able to monitor it, and that was one of my main concerns because it's possible that they could have made a triangulation. They could have found out where the source of the transmissions were. And that's the reason that I changed frequencies. I did what is called a QSY. I changed frequencies very frequently as we crossed the peninsula that night. And during the day, the frequencies were changed over to new frequencies. And they would have to be searching for where we were on the radio band, as well as trying to find out and triangulate where we were. It was on the last day of the mission that it all fell apart. We were discovered as being really an enemy unit going through their lines and collecting information and transmitting it out. And we were hit then on the 16th day of January by 3 T-30 tanks. They were Soviet tanks that clobbered the convoy and wiped out everybody except 3 of us. 3 of us made it out. We were able to make it to the helicopter rescue point on the coast of the Yellow Sea, and were picked up the helicopter.
Now, how then were you able to escape? I mean, here they've got these tanks moving in on you. They obviously have a fairly large military force moving in on you. How were you able to, you and the other two gentlemen, able to get away? Were there 3 other people or just 2
others? No, there were 2 others.
All right, 2 others.
And they were both injured. I only had a bullet wound in my leg, and I was one of the fortunate ones. The two that survived was the navigator Jim Pearson, who had a bad head injury because he hit his head on the steel bulkhead of the inside of our vehicle when the vehicle rolled into a ditch. Then there was Tom Capeman, one of the frogmen, that took a round to his left shoulder. And we were able to stop the bleeding somewhat, but he was bleeding to death over a period of time. And we were able to make it, though, over a trail. It was a 30-mile walk from where we were hit, the convoy was hit, to the point of pickup on the Yellow Sea.
All right, fine. Of course, in the story you tell about having been intercepted by a group of North Korean military, and of course you were the only one who was in a position to fight, and you just had to shoot them all. It was either you or them.
Yeah, it came to that. We came across a patrol face-to-face. I had a Browning automatic rifle, which I'd been able to pick up from the vehicle in the convoy as we were bailed out of the thing, and kept it with me, and I had to draw on them. They approached us around a curve in a trail, and they were all had their weapons at sling, that is, they were all over their shoulder, and I was carrying the Browning automatic rifle in a sling in my own hand position. I clicked the safety off and was able to take them all five down. The fifth fellow in the row tried to get up. I walked over to him, and he kept telling me that Yung Lin Ni, which I found out later that it meant I forgive you, and he died in my arms. That's been a rather difficult thing for me to live with all these years.
Well, unfortunately, war is a terrible thing, and you have to do terrible things in war to survive. This is why we should avoid war at all circumstances, unless we actually have to fight to defend ourselves. But anyway, of course, then you had to help your other two companions who were with you. A 30-mile walk, and were the helicopters there when you got there?
No, we arrived at a ledge overlooking the sea, and I had a signal light, which was part of an emergency kit that we carried, and I aimed that toward the sea, and it was picked. The light was picked up by a British frigate, and called in a rescue helicopter, a United States Air Force helicopter, which came up from the Kimpo Airfield in South Korea.
Well, that was really rather dangerous, flying an American helicopter into North Korean territory, wasn't it?
Well, it was very dangerous, and as we were picked up, and just as he lifted off to roll back toward the sea, three rounds went through the aircraft and missing some vital cables and missing us, and just left three holes. So we were very, very, very close to being hit by fire from the enemy as we took off.
Well, now what happened to the 50 or 55 Chinese who were with you?
I don't know.
Did any of them escape at all? Were they all killed?
No, it appeared that everyone in the convoy was killed. Now, the convoy commander, Lieutenant Lee, and his driver and another assistant may very well have escaped, but I can't confirm that.
And of course, God must have been with you. Specifically, to you were one of the few survivors, and what happened to the men? You've said that you were taken back then to American military facilities and cared for, and then of course you've lost track of the other men, not even knowing who they really were.
Well, I didn't know who they were, and the orders were that I wouldn't know who they were.
And of course, this has been secret all this time. What was the significant thing that you found? And of course, why was this so vitally important that they were willing to risk your lives and the lives of the Chinese in a very well laid out intelligence gathering operation? There must be something that they needed or wanted to know.
Well, it started really when the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, was disbanded immediately following World War II on the 1st of October 1945. That's when it really started to unravel as far as our ability to gather intelligence. And then the CIA was established by Truman in 1947. The problem is that General MacArthur had a strong objection to CIA presence in the Four East Command, and there was a complete failure within the intelligence community. So that's really the problem that we were facing. The president needed information, and the intelligence community was not able to provide it.
And of course, it really involved whether or not the North Koreans would have access, or the Russians would have access to a nuclear bomb, and if they would use it, if we use nuclear weapons. And the decision was, yes, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, that'd be a pretty good summary of what this was really all about, gathering information on the availability of nuclear weapons and the Soviets' willingness to use it if we use nuclear weapons in the war?
Well, the Soviets, of course, all I knew is that they had nuclear weapons on their own aircraft in Manchuria, and that was in one of the reports that I transmitted out. And it's very likely that those weapons would have been employed had we gone ahead and attacked north once more to drive the Chinese back across the Yellow River and back into Manchuria.
Well, do you think that was really the essence of why you were sent, why they risked the lives of the men to obtain that information on
We had to know. The president had to know the capability that they had and their intention as well. And without that information, he did not want to order the mission or to order anything as far as launching an all-out offensive to go back north.
Well, now, was General MacArthur still in command at this time?
No. General MacArthur had been relieved. And General Matthew Ridgway had taken over.
All right, fine. And so we were pretty much of a stalemate as far as we were right on either side of the 38th parallel. We weren't advancing. And, of course, the war was really sort of in a deadlock at that time, wasn't it?
Yes, the stalemate started on June 23rd of 1951. And then, of course, the fighting continued on and off all the way through until the end of the armistice was signed in 1953. But really, it was in limbo. And during that period of time, the president had to have information before he made his final decision. And that's what our job was.
And, of course, then the people who'd been inserted behind the enemy lines, we have no idea what would have happened to them either then.
No. As soon as they turned the reports over to the two CIA agents, they disappeared. And I didn't know anything more than what my job was on the mission. I had no information as to what the Chinese or the North Korean that had gone in, those 22 agents had gone in, had no idea what happened to them. I do know that I received 20 reports. Two reports didn't come in. One of the agents apparently had been killed during a strike on near a bridge, and the other agent simply disappeared. No one knew what happened to him. But 20 out of 22 were delivered.
All right, fine. So basically, of course, then, do you have any idea what happened to the men who survived the operation, the other two men?
No, I don't. I left them in the hospital north of Seoul, South Korea, and I was ordered to forget them.
And you were really ordered just to forget everything that did you ever see the, Colonel, was his name Brown?
No,
did
Brown,
you ever
George
see him again?
Brown. Sir?
Did you ever see the colonel again, who recruited you into this?
No, I did not.
And so this is really how these secret operations really work. They're just simply, the men are sworn to secrecy, and, of course, they never allowed to really understand what happened or even the fate of the other people who were there.
No. Well, we knew our mission, we knew our job, and that's as far as...
Hold it right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd tells that, you know, he, of course, left the other two men who were with him in the operation there at the hotel in South Korea, and, pardon me, at the hospital in South Korea. I never saw them again. He was ordered to forget this, never to speak of this, and for 46 years or so, why he maintained his secrecy about Operation Broken Reed. Was that their title for it? Was that their name for this secret operation?
Operation Broken Reed was the name of their mission.
And has anybody ever mentioned it besides you?
Well, there was 25 men that knew the name worldwide. That's how tight it was. There were many that were involved in the operation, but they knew their part, and they knew it on a basis of need to know only. But they didn't know the title.
Well, now, did you contact the military and try to get permission to write the book before you actually put it out?
Oh, yes.
And what was their response?
Well, some response, no record, no information. I wrote the CIA on the Freedom of Information Act, and I received their reply that they could neither confirm or deny that the mission did or did not take place. But it was a two-page letter that informed me that, really they couldn't reveal anything because of national security.
But it is 46 years after this operation was over, and they still cannot let even somebody who was on the mission know about it?
No, for whatever reason. And I'm not entitled to know what the reason might be.
And of course, then, as far as have you tried to contact the other people who survived with you?
Well, I don't know their names.
Okay, fine.
That's the problem.
What sort of response have you gotten? Your book's been out now for, what, almost a year? How long has it been out?
It's been out a little better than a year now.
All right, fine. So did we carry the book?
Very positive response. It's been really quite rewarding to know that a number of people that had questions as to why the war ended as it did, that Operation Broken Reed answered their questions. And so I'm very gratified to know that the big thing is that these men that died, that gave their lives, have been recognized for what they did. Funds received from this are being set aside. It's my hope that if ever we do have a treaty with North Korea, I can go back to where, or I can direct someone to go back to where those men were left, hopefully recover the remains and return them to the United States for burial. Now, that's how the money will be used.
All right, fine. Well, my wife says that this was one of the best books she's ever read, and certainly I've read it as well. It's an excellent book. Operation Broken Reed, we carry the book because it's certainly, we just want to make it easy for people to get it. It's a story of true heroism on the part of a number of American servicemen who went on a secret mission, and of course, most people have never even heard of the mission. The information they gathered has been kept secret, and is still being kept secret in the name of national security, because I don't know, maybe we don't want Kim Il-sung or his son or his grandson to know about what really happened at that time. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Colonel Boyd. But the Korean War was long and bloody, and it was a war. It was the first no-win war we ever fought. And if you've read General MacArthur's reminiscences, you'll find out that we weren't allowed to bomb the major supply centers in North Korea, where the military was getting its military equipment. That doesn't make any sense. We weren't allowed to bomb the electric generating plants in North Korea. We're, of course, far away from the Yellow River. There were so many restrictions that were put on our military, and I'm sure they must have had the frustration. And yet, of course, they were fighting not under the American flag, but under the direction of the United Nations. Did that in any way influence what happened as far as you and the man you were with was concerned?
I really don't have enough information to answer that question, sir.
Right, fine, of course. But so people don't understand that the Korean War was not fought under the American flag. It was our soldiers were primarily dying. You know, I think probably 90% of the soldiers there. There were a few soldiers from the other countries, but it was all token. It was an American war. General Chiang Kai-shek had offered to send his soldiers so we wouldn't have to waste American lives, but for whatever reason, that did not seem to be the policy from Washington, D.C., Sydney. And if you haven't read General MacArthur's book, Reminiscences, I recommend it. That's Reminiscences, but specifically we recommend... Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Of course, our guest is Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd, and we're talking about his book, Operation Broken Reed, the story of a secret mission that may very well have changed the course of the war and maybe even the course of the world, because, of course, it would have been a horrible and terrible thing if the United States had used nuclear weapons and, of course, the Russians had retaliated with nuclear weapons. And looking back on it, do you think that that is really perhaps the significance of what really happened?
Yes, I do believe. I believe that had a lot to do with it. We were on the brink of a breakout, and probably it could have expanded into World War III. Realized that line that we were on, and to seek negotiations which would take place at Panmunjom.
All right. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with all of our other stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd. And, of course, according to Colonel Boyd, they were briefed before they went on the mission that this mission was going to determine the course of the war. Because, of course, the question was, were we going to expand the war? Were we going to try to win the war? And, of course, had the United States gone into expanded the war and used nuclear weapons, and the Russians had nuclear weapons and were ready to use them, we could have been in World War III back in 1952. But once the Americans had the information that the Russians, at least the information that was given to them, that the Russians had their nuclear weapons on their planes, why, of course, at least it's assumed that the information got to President Truman. He decided not to try to expand the war or to win the war. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Colonel, do you have a website or any other source of information you'd like to put out at this time?
Well, I'd rather that the listeners would reach me through your office there, sir.
All right, fine. So we do have a contact for Colonel Boyd, and we do carry his book. We think it's an important part of history that most people have never heard of. And in war, why men are called to do terrible things. Men are called to do very courageous things. And, of course, everybody on the mission always had an assignment, and they all carried out their orders. And, well, at least seven of the ten. Were there 10 people altogether or 10 besides you?
There were 10.
There were 10 altogether.
Total. Nine and myself.
Okay, nine. And, of course, certainly seven of them died. Three came back. And but, of course, certainly seriously injured as a result of this. And it was certainly really almost like an act of God that you did survive. Has that influenced your life since then as far as your relationship with our Lord?
Well, it sent me to seminary for 4 years to get my Master of Divinity and to go into the chaplaincy, and I ministered to a number of veterans in two major hospitals and also a chemical dependency alcohol treatment center. It had a profound influence. I don't know that I would have gone that direction had this not happened to me.
And then you retired then as a military chaplain?
Well, no, I retired as a military lieutenant colonel
in
communications, but then went on to seminary and became a chaplain, and you might say I had another retirement.
Okay, fine. So you had like two professions.
Yes.
Well, looking back on your years in the military, where suddenly you had a number of interesting assignments after you came out, but I'm sure nothing to parallel the experience that you'd had there working behind the lines there in North Korea.
Nothing. No, I don't believe anything could ever parallel that. And Dr. Stan, no one knows what that's about unless they've been there. There's no way to describe it.
Well, I'm sure living in constant fear, knowing at any time you could be intercepted or captured by the enemy. In fact, on several occasions, didn't the North Koreans intercept your convoy and certainly accept the story that was put out by the Orientalists who were with you that they were guarding these captured Americans?
There were roadblocks along the way, and we were challenged a number of times. And in fact, one time when it was really well below freezing, they made us dismount and stand outside our vehicle until they made a thorough inspection of the interior of it. However, the design of the vehicle and modification had the transmitter and cryptographic equipment along with the codes in a very secure place, which was not easy to find, and we got by with it.
Well, now, how was it that they finally then determined that your cover story was not accurate, that you really were, of course, spies and not simply captured Americans being taken to a prisoner of war camp in China?
Well, it all came about with the last day in Onjin, O-N-J-I-N, which is a city very close to the Yellow Sea. And we had just wrapped it up the last night of travel, and we were challenged by a communist colonel who ordered Lieutenant Lee to go with him to his headquarters, to where their headquarters was. And Lee, of course, refused, and the colonel assumed that it was it was not an authentic mission at all. That is, our convoy wasn't what the orders really specified and what it stated it was, and that we were spies. And he did so by questioning as to why we didn't go the northern route to Hosodong, why we had traveled so far south. That was the main thing, the big argument. And as it came out, after the Lieutenant Lee, Chinese lieutenant that we had, refused to go with him. Then he said, well, I'll be back, and I'll be back in force. And he did. He came back with three T-34 tanks and other vehicles which were manned by communist troops. And the T-34 tanks opened up on a convoy coming in from the rear, took out a vehicle at a time, and really shredded the convoy. Our T-34 tanks could not respond because they would be firing backward, and we were all trying to make a run for it.
All right, fine. Of course, it must have been a terrifying experience. And then, of course, the convoy, I suppose, was eventually overrun by the communist troops. How, then, were you and the other two men who were with you able to actually get away from the communists? Did you have to hide? Did you have to run? What did you actually do?
When the convoy was hit, of course, the lead tank took around and went up in flames, and the smoke from that particular vehicle gave cover for us to escape from the vehicle we were in and make it around the burning vehicle, and we then were able to find the trail that would lead us to the pickup point on the Yellow Sea.
Well, did you know the trail was there, or was it just
that happened? Yes, we were well briefed on that. Fortunate for the other two, the one fellow that we depended upon, he just happened to be a navigator, and he had a 1 to 25,000 map stuffed in his flight suit, and he pulled it out. We were able to find the route and take it through a mountain pass.
And of course, it was there that you met the enemy patrol, and which you had, of course, to.
It was in that mountain pass that I was forced to kill those five young men.
And of course, this is the tragedy of war. It's to kill or be killed. And this is looking back on war, what is your impression of it?
Well, my impression of it, Dr. Stan, is that there must be a better way. I don't find reason for war unless you are attacked, unless you have to defend yourself. But I'm totally against initiating a war of any kind. I would find any other way. Because sometimes I think that those that make the decision to go to war needs to be out front leading the troops. And then maybe they'd make a different decision.
Yes, I'm sure that would be, Sidney, if our leaders who have taken us into war after war after war, were forced to lead the troops. Why, of course, I think we'd have very, very, very few wars. And we've had so many wars here during this past last century. And my fear is, of course, we may be on the verge of another one with Iran. Everything points in that direction. Well, Colonel, you know, Sidney, your story is really a very, very touching one, very well written. How long did it take you to write the book?
It took a little over 7 years.
7 years to record all the things that happened?
Well, to face up to the memories and to put it on paper and to edit, rewrite it, make it clear, make it understandable, make it readable, and be truthful to what had happened. It was not an easy task. It was difficult, very difficult.
And versus Sidney, all the other men who died on the mission and those who survived, but we don't even know whether they're living or dead. Unfortunately, it's one of those secret missions, and to this very date, we can't let the American people or anybody else know in the name of national security. There's so much hidden in the name of national security, and we never know why. Well, our telephone number is 1-800-1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 464-8295. If you have a question for Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd, his book, Operation Broken Reed. And as I say, we do carry the book. We think it's an important book, and we hope many of you out there will want to get it and read it. It's a story of courage, but it's also a story of courage of really finding, I think, some redemption, coming into a personal relationship with the Lord, because without that, of course, none of us are really going to survive. Either what lies ahead, this is my concern, that there's so many people who have a very, very shallow faith, and without faith, why, really, man cannot live or function at all. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. Totally. Thank you.
Well, again, Sidney, we've talked about the basic background of the book, about the mission. Looking back on it, do you think that the what the information that was gathered was really worth the lives of all the people who died?
I believe so. I believe that the nine men that perished, the nine Americans and the 66 nationalist Chinese, all their lives were not in vain. That was for a good cause. And
have you ever stopped and wondered why you were the one, one of the only three that really survived, that perhaps that God had a purpose for your life, that he was preparing you for something else?
On the last day of the mission, really, which was back in Japan on the 20th of January, at the debriefing, Colonel Brown had me make a promise that if I outlived the classified period of time, that I would let the world know what these men did for world peace and order. And I lived long enough to tell that story. I'm now 81 and still have my marbles.
Yes, you do. You do very, very well. And, of course, I think that obviously we don't even know what Colonel Brown's real name was. Everything done, of course, in secret, everything done with ciphers, everything behind a mist. The public was never to know about what really had happened during that time. And I'm sure we have many similar operations that we probably will never know about. I'm just so glad, though, that you did live beyond the statute of limitations on the secret, and that you did write the book. So at least we know one more part of the history of the events that happened at that time. Certainly, as far as the Korean War, it's simply still very much of an enigma to many, many people. It was the first war that America lost. We did not win that war. We were, well, for whatever reason, we did not win the war. Perhaps it was. Do you think that we could have expanded the war without using nuclear weapons? Do you think that that might very well have had an opportunity to be successful?
That could very well have been the problem we faced. It could have been a conventional war, but it also could very well have escalated and gone into a nuclear conflict.
All right. Well, let's go, of course, to our caller here. And do you have a question for the colonel?
Yeah, I wanted to advise you guys not badmouth the communists. They're all up there in Washington. They're going to get you for that.
All right.
They're all up there right now. There's a whole bunch of them up there.
All right. Well, they're
coming for all of us.
Well, I think that you have to understand that communism really has very little to do with Karl Marx. It has to do with the centralization of power and the elimination of freedom.
And they've got a lot more than T-34 tanks, I'll tell you that.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much for your call, and I think that it's important that people understand that freedom is not free. It's lost when good people aren't involved in the process. We're approaching our Independence Day. When the Declaration of Independence was signed, and July 4th, and that's this coming Saturday, commemorating the signing of the Declaration of Independence. We don't hear much about that anymore. We seem to have lost sight of what the Declaration really said. It was a unique document that basically said that man's freedoms came from God. And that to maintain those freedoms, governments were instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. But then, of course, we've taken God out of our schools and God out of our government and God out of most of our entertainment and out of our television. And we've replaced it with, well, I wonder if God is really ever again will bless America. Let's go to Chuck, who's calling from Salinas. Chuck, do you have a question for our guest?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Hello, Colonel Boyd.
Hello there.
God bless you, sir. Okay. I mean that with all the bottom of my heart. I'm retired military, and to hear what you went through is just unbelievable. I mean, the American people don't know how much they owe you. And thank you for having the courage to go through what you had to go through and to relive it again, to put this together for all of us, because we don't have a clue what you went through. But you know what? You just put another piece of the puzzle in there for us to understand. And also, God obviously had another calling for you because you became a pastor. He knew that was going to happen one day where he could go out and bless the rest of us.
Thank you.
And just out of curiosity, do you look at the Korean War in a different perspective now than when you did when you were over there?
Well, yes, I do. I see it as a failure and more than I had ever anticipated. My understanding of what happened then is more clear, and it could have been avoided. The interwar could have been avoided.
Yes, sir. It's sad that all those lives had to be lost, but.
Well,
you know,
1,300,000 South Korean died. The Chinese lost 1 million. The North Koreans lost about 500,000. And we still have over 8,000 that are missing. MIA.
8,000 American boys where we never tried to get them back again. That's what's so sad. Anyway, anything else you wanted to say, Chuck?
No, I just wanted to share that with you. And thank you, too, Dr. Stan, for all you do. God bless you, man.
Well, thank you, and I think it's a fascinating story, and we've had Colonel Ott Boyd on before, but we wanted to have him on again, and we'd like to get him on to all of our programs. It's something we should never forget, the sacrifices that our military men have made for this nation, and how many people are willing to parallel that today. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Lieutenant Colonel Art Boyd. We've got about 3 minutes to wrap up today's program. What message would you like to leave with our people out across America?
Well, the message that I would like to leave with my fellow Americans is that we should never jump before we know what we're jumping into. We should always know and have firm information concerning any kind of data that's provided concerning either an enemy or a prospective enemy. War should never be declared simply on the hunch that something is taking place. It should be firm information, always. You should never go on hearsay or on rumors or on someone that wants to get even with someone. Never.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and I think that we have to educate people about the horrors of war. I remember what General Sherman said, you know, war is hell and there's no way to make it any different. And, of course, he was the one who led the march to the sea during the Civil War and burned everything along the way. And I'm sure he hated himself for it, but he had to do it because he had to win. And that's the difficulty with any war. Well, Colonel, thank you so very much for being with us. We certainly look forward to having again on some of our other programs. And I would echo what Chuck from Salinas had said. And thanking you for taking the time to put together this story, to relive it, and then, of course, to give us a little bit more in the way of information about what really happened in Korea. Information which has been intentionally and purposely withheld from the American people all these years and might never have been revealed if you hadn't written the book.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Doctor.
God bless you, and thanks very much.
All
right, fine. Well, of course, that was Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd. It's a very touching, it's a very powerful book. And it's written by a very brave man who, you know, certainly had a horrible, horrible experience. He will always, of course, remember having to kill these five men. But then in war, you do terrible things. And this is why you should avoid war under any circumstances. You should never get into a war unless you're fighting for the freedom of your nation. Unfortunately, we have people in Washington, D.C. who want an empire, and that's why we're in Iraq today, and that's why we're in Pakistan and Afghanistan. We may well be very soon at war with Iran. Understand there is another agenda. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there across America and you agree with our thesis that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on the political and ideological and cultural battlefield, why, of course, we hope that you'll want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or certainly go to our website and radioliberty.com. There's a donate button there. We'd love to hear from you. We do carry a talk I gave some years ago. It's called War, the Untold Story. It tells you about all the wars we've been in, starting, of course, with the Spanish-American War, and then followed, although we weren't involved, the Boer War in South Africa was very important because, of course, it was stays managed by a secret society, the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891 to bring about a world government. And one of their front organizations came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations, and it controlled our government from the time it became was established. It became a major force, and that was in the beginning of the Second World War up until 1973 when the Trilateral Commission was established. And now the Trilateral Commission really works behind the scenes, controlling both political parties. It is not simply by accident that 6 of the 8 presidents of the World Bank, 8 of the 10 World Trade Representatives, every president or vice president of the United States from 1976 to 2008 in that period was a member of the Trilateral Commission. That certainly 7 of the secretaries of state and 9 of the secretaries of defense during that period came from the Trilateral Commission, and that literally all of the important people who surround Barack Obama today are either associated with the Trilateral Commission or the Council on Foreign Relations. This is not imaginary. You can't understand what's going on, anything that's going on, unless you understand who these people are and what their goals are. You need to get the publication we have called The Membership List of the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's a syllabus. It gives you the background behind the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, and the group of 30 that run our government. And, of course, the man who's running our economy certainly is Timothy Geithner. And, of course, he's a member of the Trilateral Commission. He is Secretary of the Treasury. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Group of 30. And nobody is ever going to tell you that any more than they'll tell you why. We turned Chrysler over to Fiat Motor Company, an Italian motor company. Why would you do that? Because the CEO of Fiat and the vice CEO of Fiat are both members of the Trilateral Commission that controls the Obama administration, and the people who give Obama, President Obama, his orders every day come from the Trilateral Commission. 11 of them are in key positions in the Obama administration, and nobody will ever tell you that. Well, certainly we carry Colonel Boyd's book. It's called Operation Broken Reed, and we recommend it. It's a wonderful read. It's a wonderful story about a very brave man. And Operation Broken Reed and the other items we've talked about are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to know about the 8,000 men that we abandoned in Korea, 8,000 men we abandoned in Korea. We have the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report that goes into that, and all the men we abandoned in the Second World War, and we abandoned in Vietnam. Why would you want to go and fight for a country that would abandon its men? Because our government is controlled not by the Congress. It's controlled by a secret group, and you need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, to know about that. If you'd like to know the fate of those 8,000 men, we carry a book called Betrayed by our friend Joe Douglas, Dr. Joe Douglas. If you want to know what really happened to the men that we abandoned during the Second World War and the First World War, but specifically the Korean War, Betrayed, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And remember that a nation that will betray its fighting men will eventually betray its own citizens. Pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.